Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe und einem erneuten Intro von mir zu unserem Permanent Banking Fintech Podcast. Gestern noch auf der FIBE in Berlin gewesen, heute schon in eurem Podcast-Player. Wir hatten das große Glück, einen Slot auf der Podcast-Stage der diesjährigen FIBE zu hosten. Das haben wir uns natürlich nicht zweimal sagen lassen. Ich habe meinen Kollegen Kevin Hackel hingeschickt und er hat sich als Gast Alexander Emischew, den Gründer von Vivid Money, eingeladen. Thema war How to make entrepreneurial decisions that drive impact. Ja, ein Unternehmen zu führen ist nämlich kein Zuckerschlecken. Gründer und ihre Teams versuchen ständig, die Konkurrenz und den Markt zu durchschauen und Veränderungen voranzutreiben. Vor allem, wenn es um Strategieänderungen und Iterationen geht, braucht es erstmal viel Mut, um genau diese Veränderungen umzusetzen. Vivid Money begann als Challenger-Bank für Privatkunden und konzentriert sich nun darauf, nicht nur eine führende Geschäftsbank, sondern vielmehr eine B2B-Plattform zu werden. Und mit Alex sprach Kevin über den strategischen Wandel und den Entscheidungsfindungsprozess, der eben mit der Weiterentwicklung des Geschäftsmodells von Vivid verbunden war. Fragen wurden gestellt, auf welche Parameter sie sich stürzen bei strategischen Entscheidungen, wie bekommt man das Team an Bord, wie implementiert man Veränderungen und verwaltet Prozesse, um sicherzustellen, dass Strategieänderungen von einer Idee zu einem funktionierenden Geschäftsmodell werden. Ja, deswegen, ich wünsche euch ganz, ganz viel Spaß beim Zuhören, bei dem Gespräch auch von der diesjährigen FIBE 2025. Viel Spaß! Leute, kurze Unterbrechung für ein bisschen Werbung. Riverty, side by side with every payment. Riverty ist das Fintech von Bertelsmann. Familiengeführt, innovativ und immer nah am Menschen. Mit über 4000 Expertinnen weltweit und über 80 Millionen Transaktionen monatlich gestalten Sie Finanzen neu. Ob flexible Kauf-auf-Rechnungslösungen, nutzerzentriertes Forderungsmanagement oder smartes Accounting, Riverty schafft finanzielle Freiheit für jeden. Finde jetzt die passende Finanzlösung für dich auf riverty.com. Riverty, your payment companion.
Riverty. Hello and welcome to another episode of your favorite finance podcast here with Kevin from Payment and Banking. Today you might wonder why we are talking in English. This is because we have a very special guest today live from FIBE Berlin, Alex, founder of Vivid Money. Before we jump into any detail, Alex, how are you doing and how did you find your way here?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for that. I mean, like I was literally running here because of the big traffic jam. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's weird. That's just Berlin giving you a headache early in the morning. So let's just jump into it right now. All of those at home who follow the fintech news closely and followed your journey closely saw that there was quite a shift from your founding. Correct me if I'm stating any facts wrong. So you started out as a retail challenger bank, then added some services such as investing. And then we already saw it, adding also business account. And then we hit the big news that is somewhat pinpointing toward building a business platform. And I think it's super interesting today to look also from an entrepreneurial mindset. How do you drive such decisions? How do you make it actually happen? How do you implement it in the team? But before doing so, maybe just Alex, give us a quick heads up. What was going on within you when you decided, okay, we now going to have a very strong focus on business banking?
I would say that it was a specific moment when we just decided to let's focus on B2B. Because literally it was a process when we launched a business line, you know, we've seen, you know, that the demand is huge and basically we are still surprised. I mean, it really works well and, you know, customers are really rushing for the product and this is like what we like. And at a certain point in time, we just decided, okay, I mean, we may allocate more resources into both like business lines or we rather just focus on SME business banking because like it's literally something that customers rushing for. Innovation is not yet there. There are some players, but not in the way that it's with B2C. So we just decided, okay, let's just allocate our resources there.
Okay, so it was more of a gradual process, you know, exactly. Adding something and then finding out what actually does work. You said there isn't so much innovation going on. I mean, we've seen different players entering the market. We have, for instance, Holvi from the Nordics. We have Tide going on here. What do you think, thinking about you developing this business banking? I think we are really more talking of an SME platform. I mean, we heard like you are entering traveling expenses, stuff like that. So give us an overview, maybe what are you doing currently and maybe what's in the player for the future so we get a full understanding of what you're doing.
Yeah, perfect question. So basically you're right. So in one sense, like there are like players who provided business banking, right? So there are many of them like here in Germany on our home market and other markets across Europe. But the thing is like very few of them, if any, focus on really building an all-in-one platform for all customer needs. And yes, certainly they may do a good job in banking, but quite often they even like, you know, make it verticalized. So they make a niche. So for example, like, you know, business account and payments, or solely card acquiring, payments online or payments offline. So something like that. And in our case, we decided to move that like in a slightly different direction. So we decided, okay, we have a person who is basically an owner. And in most of cases, it's also the same director and the same person who's really dealing with all financial flows. I mean, like, you know, they have to do payments. They have to basically do accounting, reconciliation. They have to basically declare taxes if it's like, you know, solopreneur or if it's like, you know, a company as well. So like we realized, okay, there are a lot of hassle for these people. And it's not only related to finances, completely not. I mean, like, it's not only about like ancillary services, but also everything around. And that's the reason why we entered, for example, in the business travel area, right? It's closer to expense management, right? You know, so, but it's like also like, you know, some hassle that entrepreneurs have right now. And yeah, and our idea that in basically 1-2 year time, we basically will evolve in a platform which provides all the services that entrepreneur needs for like their like financial and non-financial, like, you know, routine. So basically the idea that they do what they want to do, I don't know, whatever they do, like, you know, provide services, sell some goods, etc. And we just do the rest.
Okay, very interesting. I mean, you already pointed it out, you have several players in the landscape that maybe focus on accounting, focusing on business cards. So are you planning to actually develop everything within Vivid, or do you also see, you know, embedded finance is a huge buzzword. Do you also see a potential where you, I don't know, cooperate with lending as a service, for instance? Do you, how's the master plan looking here for Vivid?
We actually do both, and I don't believe in closed ecosystems. So in reality, like we just announced like in a couple of days ago, our partnership with Banksware, like for embedded lending. So since Monday, our customers across Germany, they are able to receive a loan up to $250,000. So basically, and that's happening within our app, within our browser app or mobile app. So basically you can just apply for a loan and get your money straight away to your account. So, and at the same time, like we do a lot of stuff ourselves. And I do believe that this is like the best way how to interact. So for example, just to give an example. So we have our own invoicing tool, right? And our customers are able to issue invoices for free, track them, you know, send reminders. They can issue e-invoices, right? And at the same time, we are integrated with our invoicing systems. And like, you know, say, you know, Zendesk, right? Or if you want to use LexOffice tools, that's totally fine. I mean, you can do that. So basically we do both. We have separate teams, the one that works on integration and the one that works on internal tool. And that's great. I mean, like, you know, that's a way. So some people will say, okay, I want to use everything internally, or I'm already using some tool, I will just integrate it with a Vivid account.
So that's very interesting. So not really, or maybe you try, but not necessarily have this closed ecosystem where you say, okay, everything comes from us, or you don't get it, but are pretty open, like to plug and play other services.
Just to make it perfectly clear. So we do not try to grab, you know, the share of financial wallet, so to say. What we try to do is to grab the highest possible share of attention of our customers, I mean, directors and those who are really dealing with financial flows, etc. So to basically make most of them. So like take the most hassle out of them. And that's, I think, the best way. So like, you know, imagine like I will push everyone to switch to my invoicing. Okay, that will bring more issues for them because they need to kind of, you know, somehow like, you know, import that and export, etc. So it will be a problem, right? You know, that's why we just say, okay, let's make the simplest possible way for them. Mm-hmm. Would that be integration or our own tool? That's it.
I think that's a great market approach because that's a win-win for everyone, and you're just trying to, you know, make it suit to the best of your business. Before I dive deeper into business banking and your decision making, I would like to zoom out a little bit and ask you like a general question or your perspective on the market. So if you, for instance, let's have a look at retail banking, neobanks. So what we saw was like, in the beginning, you had like focusing on a niche, for instance, current accounts. And what we see, for instance, I think Valentin is just on stage in parallel to our podcast. We saw they were entering investing. We saw Trade Republic doing sort of banking services. We saw N26 with Gix adding different services. Do you think it's a necessity for a fintech today to become more of a platform, more like to do it all instead of acing one single niche? What is your perspective on this, maybe?
I think that, you know, both models will exist. So, okay, if like we could say just two, right? You know, but, you know, both ways are possible. You know, the one way, when you're a very focused, specialized niche player and you do your thing really, really well and you do always an extra mile and you go better than universal players and vice versa, you know, these platforms, so they also work. But important part for these platforms is basically how efficient are you with integration that, you know, into your platform so customers really feel this seamless experience. So it's important that, okay, customer doesn't really kind of need to re-login or, you know, when they move money between different entities, it should be instant, right? You know, you don't think about that one. So in that sense, it's super important, like, how do you structure the company and how do you basically develop this one? So, and we've seen many examples. I don't want to name specific, you know, like companies, but we've seen many examples and cases, like in terms of products that were launched not in a good way. And sometimes we also fail here as well. So like, you know, I'm not saying that we are the best here. So, but what we are always striving to do is basically to make it in a way that customer really may onboard with a new product, may open a new account or, you know, start using the service without any additional click. So like, say, for example, business travel we launched just, you know, literally a week and a half ago. So it is a product built with partnership, right? And but we just decided to make it integrated. So in a way that you as a customer, you don't need to do anything. You basically see the type of travel, right? You know, you start your search, you decide for a hotel, for a room, and you book it straight away. We basically allow you to pay with one click with our card. So you don't need to input details, input like, you know, details of your like employees, if they are, you're booking for them. So like all this stuff is integrated. So, and this is what I mean by seamless experience.
Mm-hmm. Makes total sense. And I think also goes back to what you mentioned with becoming a platform and like being agnostic and basically doing everything you can just to offer a great service. Is it your own or with a partner? Maybe one question, because you mentioned it, traveling. What I hear a lot, just let's take a little detour in terms of agentic AI. Mm-hmm. Do you see, is this something you have on the roadmap, like to automate stuff more, to have like your AI agents doing stuff for you? How are you looking at these developments those days?
We heavily use AI, I must say, internally, that's for sure. We do have some client-facing application doing really well. Just to give you some examples of that. So, but again, like, let's demystify AI a bit, right? You know, so just had a yesterday, you know, talk on the event, and then we discussed with one of the person there. So basically, it's not like something super duper, like kind of strange or different from like a regular life. It's just a multiple of different AI agents doing a very small jobs, right? You know, and basically do some basic stuff. And we do have it a lot in our like compliance, transaction monitoring, customer service, and basically to prepare some information for the person to decide on. Sometimes it's like in a full cycle, so we don't have a human in the loop. Sometimes it's like human in the loop. So say every time when we speak about compliance, acceptance, transaction monitoring, it's always human in the loop, right? You know, because we just want to make sure that we make the right decision right here. If you look about customer service, the cost of error is not that high. So therefore, like, we always make it in a way that, okay, we try to make it without human in the loop. And then we see on ratings, if customer rate our responses, like our conversations bad, that means that we did something wrong. And so we basically kind of switch it off and say, okay, now we rebuild it again. And some other customer facing things, I think the most successful one was like basically billing box. So that's the most successful one. So what does it mean? Regularly, typically, company, they collect, you know, all bills on some email, you know, like bills at whatever, give it that money.
Yeah.
And what's going on after that? Basically, you collect bills, And you were able to forward this one to the special email box, we call it billing box, that we created for your company. And we automatically recognize this one. So there are like a couple of AI agents who like recognize everything, say, okay, this is suspicious, you know, invoice, this is something from like, you know, whitelist, could be paid immediately. And we basically prepare the whole dashboard for, I don't know, approver or finance director, you know, the managing director. So they can decide, okay, I want to approve it in bulk, reject one, or, you know, send it for additional, you know, confirmation for doing to someone else. So that's basically how it works. And this is really some magic inside, you know, no one say, okay, it's AI underneath, but, you know, for customer, it's like, you know, just works.
And saves a lot of time, I guess, especially for compliance officers. I'm thinking about accountants. I mean, it's so painful, you know, asking your colleagues all the time. It happens all the time to me, Kevin. Where are your receipts? I need them. They're like, yeah, so you were like 4 weeks ago. So I think everything that helps here is just great. Maybe quickly jump back to a point we had early, because I would be interested. We have a lot of listeners that maybe are thinking about founding a company themselves. Speaking of niche versus platforms, would you argue you have to reach a certain size as a company first before developing into a platform, or do you think it's even possible to start out as a platform already, or is this a different or a difficult investment case?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I would say personally, like, because I had plenty of experience, you know, like with building different platforms, and based on my experience, you should first focus on niche and build some product which will be really the driver of your growth, the driver of, like, you know, flow of customers, you know, the build the portfolio of customers, right? And after that, you can transform into platform. Or, alternatively, you can have a lot of funding and basically start to build a platform straight from the very beginning. But this is really difficult. So in 99% of cases, when they started to do that, we failed. So in fact, okay, it's important basically to really have either funding or really kind of a solid foundation in different way, meaning like, you know, some customers and portfolio to build this one. So in our case, the reason we decided to go for that, it was easy because, like, you know, we saw that, okay, listen, we started less than 12 months ago. We already crossed, you know, like 30,000 business customers in just a year in Germany. So there was like, wow, we realized, okay, it's growing super fast. So why shouldn't we then build a platform rather than just a niche player? Because, like, we already see that the demand is huge and, like, we have this traction. As easy as that.
Okay, get it. We'll jump into the decision-making in a second, also to the go-to-market strategy, because I think that's super interesting. But you said in 99%, which is basically all of it, it failed. What do you think are the core reasons for it? Is it sloppily thought through? Is it like not the right parameters in place, or the product not good enough and it's working together? What do you think are some key things you see when those things fail?
Yeah, the key thing is, okay, there are plenty of like points here, but just to mention a few of them. First, it's very difficult to change customer habits. I said just change customer habits. I mean, like, you know, if you used to do something in this specific way, it's very difficult to change it and very expensive. So in most of cases, you may kind of incentivize customers, pay them bonuses, cashbacks, whatever, like, you know, to change their behavior. But this is really difficult and really expensive. And that's one of the reasons why you shouldn't do that straight from the very beginning. The second reason is, I would say, like, it's really difficult to find something like some pain point in customer behavior that can completely kind of change the way you think about things. So you may find something small, but it's really difficult to find something really big, which will become a platform. So meaning that you really need to find the real pain point, not for, like, you know, 100 or 1,000 or, you know, 10,000 people, but you really should find a pain point for hundreds of thousands or millions of people, right? And that's why, like, you know, you may be always surprised. And that was exactly our approach, as I said. Like, you know, we are still surprised on the way how it flies, you know, with SME banking. So, like, we underestimated how big the market is, how fast it's growing, and how underpenetrated and unmet needs are of, you know, entrepreneurs. So that's why, like, you know, really when we see this traction, that encourage us to kind of expand in terms of like products.
Leute, kurze Unterbrechung für ein bisschen Werbung. Unbezahlte Rechnung? Kein Problem. Debtest, das digitale Inkasso Europas, realisiert deine offenen Forderungen innovativ, effizient und digital. Mit modernster KI finden wir den besten Weg zu deinen Schuldnern. Per Anruf, Brief, E-Mail, SMS oder WhatsApp. Automatisierte Prozesse, Mahnungen in Landessprache und flexible Zahlungsmethoden sorgen für schnellere Zahlungen in ganz Europa. Für B2B und B2C. Jetzt beauftragen und Liquidität sichern. Debtest. Digital Inkasso Europa. Mehr auf debtest.de.
So I already get the feeling because I now want to have a look at like this change implementation process a little bit to give us an idea or your thoughts on how to implement change successfully, because, you know, turning basically from a retail-facing bank to a business banking platform is quite a step. So what I learned already, correct me if I'm wrong, for you it's more like exploring opportunities, see how those works out, and then, you know, go deeper if something's working and start adding things. But what are components you have to do right to actually make it work within the team? Because at least from what you're doing as an employee at your company, it's different if you are a customer agent in a retail business compared to business banking. So maybe take us through in terms of investor relationships, stakeholder management, employees, how to implement a change that is actually pretty big, retail to business, and what are like the steps and what you have to do in terms of communication management style. So I would be super interested in what you're doing there.
Let me give you some highlight on that process. So first of all, I think what helped a lot in this transition is basically the core, let's say, reason why we do that. And the core reason for most of people at Vivid is that we want to build great products and we want to excite people and see them happy and get the response. In that sense, like, you know, I would say we are greedy for, like, you know, customers saying, hey, you really did a great job. So in that sense, it doesn't matter. You may do like B2C, you may do B2B, you may go into any other industry. Okay, certainly you should have an expertise, right? But in that sense, it wasn't such a big change. Different audience? Yes, agree. Different way of interacting with customers? Yes, certainly. Different products? Yes, certainly, and different products. But at the same time, if you look at, you know, what do we do for them? We listen to their needs, we build a product, we get the feedback, we try to adjust the product if they don't like it or like it not that much as we want to. And yeah, we just continue the same journey. So, and apparently it was like, okay, one team doing the, you know, SME banking. Then like, you know, then there were like two teams, then three teams. And, you know, just on the way, we switched all our product teams towards SME banking because we just realized, okay, it's so much rewarding from, you know, speaking about customer feedback, right? And so much rewarding in terms of like any like financials. So, and people were already convinced on this point in time. They saw that how strong the demand is, you know, what customers are saying about this one. And for them, it wasn't like, you know, a somehow like bad switch. No, they were like, you know, okay, great. I mean, let's just do that.
But maybe like speaking figuratively, I just imagine, and I guess it didn't happen like that, but I just imagine you walk in into a management meeting with your key decision makers in the company and you say, hey guys, you know, I slept over this and the data is really showing we should really dive deep into business banking and let's, you know, defocus a little bit the retail sector. Still servicing them, but let's defocus. Weren't there any conflict or were they like, oh, you're totally right, let's jump into it? Or were there certain voices who said, maybe we should do something else? So how do you manage this process and make sure that everyone is on board at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that we always have these voices. And I mean, like, it's never like the similar process like as you described that I came into the room. So first of all, it's like, you know, hundreds, if not like thousands of like, you know, conversations over like, you know, Zoom, Meet, you know, in person, you know, Slack communication, etc. So in fact, and this is something special about our culture, we always encourage challenging. So literally, like, I'm the most challenged person in the company. So like, every day, like, you know, I hear like, okay, we did it wrong, we did that wrong, and like, you know, why did we make this such a decision? And we encourage direct feedback, and that helps basically to improve, right? And in that sense, like, we always have people who are not happy with what we do, but that doesn't mean that they do not interact. Instead, I would say that this is great because, like, you know, if you have silent people, mm-hmm. silence is a bad sign. That's the sign that maybe this person is careless. They don't really care about what's going on, the company, what product do we build, etc. So I'm always confused. Every time when I hear like people in the room, they all agree, like I double check like with like, you know, some managers after the meeting. Okay, is everything fine with this person? It's like, you know, he didn't say anything bad. He didn't object, didn't like provide an opinion. So mm-hmm. maybe it's not okay. Like, you know, sometimes it's okay, but sometimes it's not okay. So for me, therefore, like, it's not like, you know, one day decision. It's like just many, many conversations, and we never have, let's say, made decision. So what does it mean, made decision? So every time we launch something or just continue to develop something, we evolve, meaning like tomorrow, today, someone may come and say, hey, business travel was not such a good idea. Let's adjust it, right? You know, because customers do not like it or like it in a different way. Okay, we just like look at the feedback, collect like, you know, more responses from customers, okay, and then just adjust the product. So we never have the finished, like, ultimate product.
Get it
built. So it's always evolving.
Super interesting. And I mean, I like your point about how you reach decisions and encourage employees to challenge you, because we all know this from different working setups where you sit in a meeting room, everyone is smiling, clapping their hands, great job. I'm exaggerating here, of course. But then after 5 minutes later in the coffee break, oh my God, this is so stupid. We shouldn't do this. We shouldn't do that. And I think this is when you start failing as a company, because first, you don't have everyone on board. And second, you won't manage to have all those ideas present at the table, actually enter them into the product. So I think this is super interesting. Maybe last question on that, because I also want to focus on another area. Do you manage to take all the employees with you and develop them in additional or slightly changed roles? Or what are also some parts, okay, where a couple of left the company, you hired new specialists in them. How was this change management from decision-making to actual implementation on the workforce level look like?
Yeah, I would say it was closer to the latter, you know, explanation that you mentioned. So there were some people who left. There were like some people who were okay. I would say like 95-97% of people in the company, they were okay. So like, you know, so generally it wasn't like, you know, a big shift that everyone was not happy about. So in fact, I would say that, yes, many people changed their roles, and this is what we encourage, what we like. I really like when people switched from one area to another one. And like, you know, and then, yes, it's a bet for us. So we may find out that, you know, like a half a year time, you know, year and time later, right? You know, that this person was not fit for the job, right? But if we believe that this person is great and, you know, with a brilliant mind, why shouldn't we try that? So, and we did several bets out of that one. So like we switched, like, you know, the one of like most senior, like chief business person into chief operations officer.
Okay.
Doing really great. We switched a person in charge of crypto into head of growth. She's doing incredibly well. So like, you know, in that sense, like, you know, I like it. I mean, like, you know, and again, it's always a bet. So you may realize, okay, it doesn't work, but this ones were really good. So in that sense, I don't think it was a problem. And yes, certainly we brought some new people. So like, certainly like we had to bring some experience like from business banking, certainly. So we brought people with experience like, you know, from our competitors. I mean, like, you know, Conto, Revolut Business, Monzo Business. So yeah, I mean, like, that helps a lot.
Very interesting. So would you say it's fair to say it's like a twofold process, like A, keeping the company agile in terms of where are we going, and at the same time, doing the same with your people in terms of as we develop as a company, we expect you to develop with the company as well. And then, you know, find different roles, find different capacities, find new strengths you didn't know were there. Is it something like that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can give you another funny example. I call her, like, you know, this lady, a champion of change, right? You know, so sounds honestly, true. And like this shows, like, you know, how the company really evolved. So She is a product manager and leading the team, and really one of the best teams across the company, I must say. I hope she listens. So she was in charge of daily banking for B2C first. Then a few quarters later, she was in charge of the huge migration project, because like we shifted towards our own licenses from banking as a service partner. Then another project, monetization. Then the fourth project, business travel for SME. So like, you know, and she literally switched. And this is just 1 year. This is like, you know, 12 months period. So, and what I like about this example is basically this all works well. So for team, it's like completely different expertise, completely different products, completely different, you know, tools. But at the same time, they like it and they basically jam on what works and what's important for us these days. And that's a really great example that shows like how we build internally. So we rather just have teams who deliver some value for customers. If the value is not that good, okay, we just jump onto the next one.
Very cool. Sounds like very fun to work at Vivid, actually.
Hope so.
So thanks for sharing those insights. Maybe for the last couple of minutes, you already mentioned that you see huge potential in the market. You see it underserved. So if we have a look now at your go-to-market strategy, what are the things you're doing or you may be doing differently? Or what do you think are the key drivers for your growth that separates you from competitors?
A few things that I see here. So first of all, we are designed differently as a company, right? You know, so we are designed for the fast, I would say, rapid product development with a high product velocity. And that really is different. And customers, they do really appreciate this one. At least from what I see, like they really like when we constantly deliver them value without them paying additional money for that. So second, we price our products in a way that we are really much more financially appealing to customers. Why we can do that? Because we came from different world. So most of our competitors, they are B2B banks.
Mm-hmm.
So they started and they built on top of different margins. While when you come from B2C world, you operate in a very low margin environment. So you have to really pick up each and every stone, you know, find efficiencies everywhere. So like, and like when you operate in such an environment and when you survive with this one, so you basically develop a very cost efficient platform. And then you can basically provide better pricing for customers while still being profitable. And that's a good thing.
Can I ask you one thing on that? Because on my way in the traffic jam, I quickly scanned to the Vivid platform and
yeah.
I think you're currently doing 4% interest,
yeah,
which is huge. But how do you do it? I think money markets are currently, if you're lucky, 2.5, 2.6, maybe. So how do you do it?
Yeah, but it's very simple in that sense. So like 4%, that's what we have our promo period. So in a promo period, this is basically what I call honeymoon for customers. So okay, we really want to make sure that they like what they see and we really want them adopt into this one. So look at this one as our payment to get them in. I told you that it's expensive to explain to customers. I know it's strange. You know, customers should be happy that we pay them interest, right? You know, but I have to convince them. So that's kind of my payment to convince them. So they really understand that they should get interest on their money. After 2 months, you come to the normal rates, depending on the you know, your pricing plan. Certainly, like, you know, the highest one, it's exactly as you mentioned, 2.6%. So yeah, basically we pass, you know, the interest to customers. So more on the higher tiers and the less on the lower tiers. So that's how it works.
Would you say at the end of the day, a reason deciding for a business bank in the first place is pricing, interest, stuff like that? Or what is the main driver? And
if you speak about purely like financially, right, you know, you can basically take any comparison dimension, whatever. Like you may look at, okay, who does pay interest on my money? David does. So who does pay me generous cashback? We does on corporate cards spent, you know, who has like pay as you go? I mean, like free forever account for legal entities. That's again Vivid. So, and if you look at like, okay, who provides me many sub accounts, you know, much more than, you know, regular bank, that's Vivid does, you know. So basically what we do, we look at the pricing and we say, okay, listen, we want to be better in each and every category. So whenever customer look at us, we are on top. Why we can afford that one? And that's what I told you. Like we can afford this one because like the cost platform, I mean, like the cost for our platform is just much lower than our peers.
Super interesting. And maybe last question on that, if you look on the data coming in, new clients, is it people mostly switching? Is it more of new clients setting up their business just at once who are to win easier? Or what are different strategies maybe there?
Yeah, I mean, like in our case, as of now, as of today, it's more switching. So in that sense, we are slightly different to our competitors. So they are strong in new companies' information. And yes, we certainly do onboard them as well, right? I have like plenty of friends like around here at Vibe, you know, who have accounts, you know, with us, right? But at the same time, like I would say majority, they are switching. So this new company that just formed, it's kind of potential for us. So we will be there. So we already are super strong in Germany. Like, okay, we do not have public figures, but my understanding is that we are number one by acquisition. New customers onboardings. But really, I think that there would be just one of the next potentials for us to unlock.
Very interesting. Alex, I could go on for ages, but I think we have to make space for the next podcast. I think for us at Payment and Banking, it would be super interesting to follow how you continue build reputation within the business banking sector. I think from us, best of luck. Interesting case. I love business banking. It's such a versatile thing to do. So I say goodbye and maybe just meet you next time. Let's have a catch up in a year or something. We'll see how things have developed.
Agreed. Thanks. That was a great conversation. Enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, Alex. See you.
See you.